This is tape two of the oral history interview conducted by Donna Taylor with former University of Wisconsin President John C. Weaver. First off, this morning, before we get into the really big topic of merger, I would be interested in knowing just what your goals, what your expectations were when you initially came to the University of Wisconsin as president, and what at that time your goals were.
What do you mean, my personal goals?
Well, I don't mean personal. What were your thoughts and goals related to the direction that the university might take, as you saw it when you first came?
Well, I always had lived in the belief that the University of Wisconsin at Madison was one of the nation's really distinguished universities. Distinguished for research, distinguished for graduate education, distinguished for general university effort, certainly world famous in extension work, and the College of Agriculture and its long-standing traditions of doing research and the problems that the people out on the land of the state were confronted with, and then carrying that knowledge effectively to them, and all of these things that the university was distinguished for, or had been distinguished for over many years. I guess that one's overriding feeling would be that the excellence of the staff, the excellence of the academic tradition, and the freedom of academic inquiry of this institution needed to be preserved and carried forward. I don't think any one man is capable of visions for an institution such as this that are unique or of any special merit. I think the University of Wisconsin has always operated on the basis more of the consensus of an excellent faculty, a faculty that includes the administration by tradition in this setting, because all members of the administration are members of the faculty and vice versa. And I guess that if I had any goals, they would only have been to try in concert with the traditions and the excellent faculty and the high quality student body of this institution to try to be sure that it moved forward with the excellence and the preservation of the traditions that had made it great in years past. Actually, of course, at the time I came, the university was in enormous turmoil and student rebellion, and I guess one couldn't help but have the hope that these destructive and rebellious ways of life could be reduced to more moderate tenor, and that the university could go on about the free inquiry and teaching that it had always been famous for without that kind of disruption. I don't know that, I don't think anyone would be wise to such as the one at Wisconsin without or with a lot of preconceived ideas about goals. I think it the goals of this institution have by tradition been, as I said a moment ago, achieved by the consensus of many people, and I think that always is going to be true.
Now, it's a matter, certainly of record, that you'd hardly set foot on the campus in an official capacity before the governor's project about merger was announced, and you were confronted with this. Now, I have read in the press a statement to the effect that the struggle on this issue was one of the most protracted and severe in the university's or the history of Wisconsin educational legislation. Certainly my own recollections of the atmosphere on the campus at the time would go along with this sort of statement. But I have recently been going through the records of the Regents, and to my surprise, general feeling I got was one of considerable restraint and calm consideration of a new suggestion. These don't quite seem to fit somehow. And what I would most like to hear, if you would be willing, is a kind of chronology of the events as you yourself saw them.
Well, it was a long, complicated, and tangled story, and I'm sure that I can't, off the top of my head, remember all of the stages in it. Perhaps all of the stages aren't in themselves that significant. You said that I had hardly stepped foot on the campus before the problems of a new state administration and its overt goals with regard to higher education in this state had become apparent. Actually, they became apparent to me even a little before I stepped foot on the campus. The University of Wisconsin has always been a focus of, but at least at many times in its history, has been the focus of political interest and political controversy in Wisconsin. And I suppose in a way that's to be expected, because Wisconsin's always been a very active state politically. And the university has been one of its major expenditures, one of its great investments, and certainly one of its most renowned activities. And it's not surprising, I would guess, that many governors, and often the legislature and the people of the state generally, have taken a more than average interest in their university and its affairs, the way it was perceived as conducting its affairs. It was very clear to me when I came back to Wisconsin in the first of on the 1st of December 1970 that this was going to be another era of political interest in the university. And having lived here as long as I had, I guess I wasn't entirely surprised by that, though I was a little taken aback by the speed with which the fact made itself manifest. I don't remember the exact date, but somewhere in the latter part of December of the year of 1970, before I had actually officially taken the office of president, but we had moved to Madison and had moved our things into 130 North Prospect. And Bernard Ziegler, who was then the president of the Board of Regents, president of the board that had hired me, called me one day to say that he thought it would be desirable if, as a courtesy, he was to take me down to the Capitol and introduce me to Mr. Lucy, who was to become governor on the same date that I was to become president of the university, beginning of January. Actually, I guess I officially became president on the 1st of January, and Mr. Lucy's inauguration was 4th or 5th or something like that, but obviously, of course, we took office at the same essential time. And so one morning, Mr. Ziegler and I, in late December of 1970, went down to the state capitol. Mr. Lucy had already taken up temporary offices in the basement of the Capitol, awaiting Mr. Governor Knowles' departure at inauguration time in the first week in January. And I remember very well that the very first thing that Mr. Lucy said to me when Regent Ziegler introduced me to him, his opening sentence was, or his opening comment was, well, I told the board of the that Republican Board of Regents that they shouldn't appoint a new president of the university until I was in taken office, which it seemed to me a rather peculiar kind of partisan approach to meeting a man that was going to be responsible for one of the principal agencies of state government.
Sounds to me, perhaps, that he might have been referring to the, or been upset a little at the fact that you were actually appointed within just a couple of weeks of the time he was elected.
I don't remember the exact timing, but it's true that I had been selected by the board in at approximately the time of the election, or just a little before. But I guess my reaction to this would be that this was an expression of partisan politics with respect to the university that I worried about from the very beginning. It's obvious that Mr. Lucy, who analyzes problems most commonly in their partisan political terms, was working on the assumption that because the Board of Regents that hired me was in fact composed of 9 Republican appointees of a Republican governor, that obviously, therefore, I must also be regarded as a clear-cut Republican and treated as he, a Democrat, would treat any other Republican, namely in a combative manner. In truth, the Board of Regents that hired me never asked about my politics, as I think they shouldn't have. I gave no evidence of being identified with a major political party. I had certainly, in my years as president of the University of Missouri, been very circumspect about not taking on any political coloration, because I think the university belongs to all the people of the state. Its affairs are not partisan and should not be approached in a partisan manner. And certainly the president shouldn't be identified with a partisan cause. And even though all of the members of the board that hired me were identified as Republicans, I am unaware that they made any effort to appoint a Republican president. And I think it would be a matter, or should be a matter, of basically no consequence to either the people of the state or the legislature or the governor what political party the president of the university might privately be identified with, as long as he wasn't seeking to play partisan politics in the life of the state, which I think would be very inappropriate for the president to do. But as I say, Governor Lucey's immediate assumption that I must be Republican because I've been appointed by a Republican board, and that therefore I was to be regarded as somebody that he would seek to do battle with, and even by implication in his opening comments to me that I might be identifiable as someone with either the potential for or the intention to be a partisan opponent of his, I think was really most unfortunate.
You feel this set the tone for what came
it
after?
It most certainly did, and my feeling was through many, many months of my first being here, was that he had me identified in his mind as an active Republican, potentially a Republican opponent of the Democratic administration for partisan reasons, and that I had to be suspicioned and treated in that manner. Though, as I say, I had given no evidence of partisan identification of any kind, of which I'm aware. And certainly had no interest in or intent to be identified with partisan politics in the state of Wisconsin. I wanted to serve the University of Wisconsin in a completely nonpartisan way, because I think, as I say, that the university belongs to all the people of the state, not to the Republicans or to the Democrats, but to the people of Wisconsin. In any event, that was background to the fact that almost immediately upon taking office, Mr. Lucey made it clear to the legislature and to the press that a non-negotiable demand on his part. He called it that, a non-negotiable demand, that the universities of the state, the two systems of universities of the state, the University of Wisconsin and its four-year campuses and 10 two-year campuses and statewide extension on the one hand, and the state university system operated by a different board of regents and a different set of administration should be combined and merged in a single system. People rather generally, in my experience, said that they had not heard that Mr. Lucey make an issue of this in the campaign. I was not in the state at the time, so I can't testify on that personally, but I don't think I have ever found anybody who was willing to say that Mr. Lucy had made the merger of public higher education a major campaign issue, or that anybody had indeed even heard him mention the subject in the campaign. Exactly where and at what time he developed the idea that this was so important to him politically, I don't know. But it became evident that it was almost immediately after his inauguration, and certainly almost immediately, therefore, after my becoming president of the University of Wisconsin. One of the interesting things about it as an issue, as I remember it, is that, of course, in the early days when I came to the presidency of the university, I did a great deal of speaking to public audiences here in Madison and elsewhere around the state, trying to, among other things, regain some measure of the confidence of the people of Wisconsin in their university, which had been very, very severely eroded by the student rebellion. Let me just say as an aside on that, that as I spoke in those early months and throughout that first year to people all over Wisconsin about the university, at service clubs, at various kinds of professional gatherings, agricultural gatherings, labor gatherings, it got to where I could almost tell you before I started speaking what the questions that would be asked were going to be when I got through talking, and even the tone of voice in which they'd be asked. The people of Wisconsin were, in effect, pointing a very bony finger at the university and charging it with enormously irresponsible behavior. A state that has obviously long believed in higher education and sacrificed for higher education had lost a lot of confidence in its university that it had long taken great pride in, and it was perfectly clear that in the legislature and among the people of the state there was an enormous job to be done in trying to regain the faith of the people of Wisconsin in its university.
What was, just in a nutshell, the major criticism?
Well, the major criticism, of course, was that the university had no business letting the students run wild down here and burn up buildings and blow up buildings and try to disrupt classes and do everything they could to prevent people from getting a responsible education in the university that the state had sacrificed a lot for financially. That it made no sense for the university not to clamp down on these rebellious people, and of course there was a widespread public opinion that they were largely out-of-state students and largely from the East, and why didn't we kick them out of the state and let them get an education somewhere else if they wanted to try to destroy a university in Wisconsin? And the public was just uptight. They were mad. They wanted retribution on this university for its behavior, and so did the legislature. I found, as people would ask me in angry tones, how could I condone the behavior of the students down here, all the drugs and the presumably generally immoral behavior and the effort at disruption and destruction, I found myself on many an harassed evening with the groups around the state finally turning my finger back at the audience and saying, now look, remember, those are your kids. The university didn't bring them up. The university didn't give them their value systems. The university didn't establish their disciplinary habits. And the university isn't a reform school. It isn't a place where you expect to put a heavy repressive hand on young people. It's a place where you hope to stimulate and excite their minds. It's an unsettling place, not a place that you expect to levy heavy discipline on young people. We certainly believe in law and order. We believe in orderly behavior. Good education means good discipline. But don't forget, they're kids you sent us. They aren't kids we brought up. And you know, in the final analysis, that's pretty hard to respond to, because the people of this state, I think, know or knew that there was a lot of truth in the fact that this was a generation of young people that had come out of a very permissive parental society. Mm-hmm. And that all the blame wasn't in one place. At least I tried very hard to make this point. That indeed we didn't condone the kind of, many of the kinds of things that were going on, but that we alone were not either responsible for or capable of immediately correcting the problems that existed. Well, anyway, I mentioned this political climate because I think it was very clear that, at least it seemed always very clear to me, that Mr. Lucy sensed how anti-university the public feeling running in the state was. And I think he made the political judgment that it was going to be good political medicine to be combative about the university and in a position of being critical of the university and how much it cost and how it needed this, that, and the other thing about better teaching and all the things that he went through. He, I think, was seeing this as an adroit political move that would be well accepted by the public of the state that was very uptight and unhappy about their university. And I have a feeling that somewhere, somehow, the idea of merger evolved in that kind of a climate in his mind, combined with the fact that I think he felt that if he could get merger, he could turn down the financial screws on all the universities in the state, and this would be an advantage to him in another political gambit that he saw as being exceptionally responsive to the public opinion of the day, namely that there should be no increase in taxes. In spite of inflation, there should be no increase in taxes, and the fact that government costs, university included, were spiraling upward with inflation, that you held the line and screwed down the hatches on all government agencies, and maybe the university rather in particular, because it was so unpopular with the people of the state at the time, so that you wouldn't have to raise taxes in spite of inflation. Now I speculate on those things. I came to believe them as true, although I never had conversations with Mr. Lucy in which he specified them as being his point of view. It was certainly, in any event, clear that A, he was taking a posture of being tough with the university, which he felt would be politically well accepted, and B, he was going to be financial, in terms of financial dealings with the university, he was going to be very tight-fisted, because this was, in his view, going to be one of the popular places to save money so that he could have the political advantage of saying, I haven't permitted any tax increases. Now, it is true that almost immediately upon his becoming governor, we were faced with the his demand for merger, and which was a move to hold down the university costs of the state, and a move to give tighter control to the universities. And in his first budget recommendations, the university came off with very lean and austere recommendations from him, which were a part not only of his, what I felt was a sort of a generally anti-university attitude, but a drive toward financial economy, and his belief that that in itself was political salvation in this in that day. I guess I should say at this point that as I was during those months of early 1971, without very almost constantly talking to people around the state, talking to people in large groups, small groups, and individually, it became increasingly apparent that even though the regents and the people in the universities had a very vital interest in and spent a lot of time talking about this demand for the merger of all public higher education in the state, I began to realize that it was a non-issue among the public.
That's interesting.
Time after time in places even like Milwaukee, and certainly among the smaller communities of the state from south to north, I would have the tendency to want to discuss the pros and cons of merger along with other things that I was talking about in the university's life and activities of the time. And time after time I would experience the fact that people in the audience weren't even aware that there was an issue about this. Mr. Lucy and the press that covered his constant statements about the subject appeared to think he had a handhold on a matter of vital interest to the people of Wisconsin. I don't believe he did. And even when merger took place, I'll bet you a very substantial percentage, I'm sure more than half, and maybe more than two-thirds of the people of this state didn't even know it had happened and had no concept of what it meant if it had happened. It was a non-issue politically in the state, which is an interesting fact in view of the fact that here at home base, of course, we all thought it was a hot political issue. It was for us.
Exactly.
But for the people of Wisconsin, it wasn't. And if anybody had gone out and tried to raise a major political opposition to merger, it would have been very difficult because people weren't interested in the subject. Oh, well, that's just organizational business and government. That's of no great consequence. Eau Claire and River Falls and Platteville and Madison are all still going to be there. And what difference does it make how you organize it? That was the attitude of the average person. I can testify it from having discussed the matter with all kinds of groups all over the state throughout the period working up to merger. It just was not, there was no way that anybody would have raised any major groundswell one way or another on that subject in the political arena. It was not of political interest in the state.
Well, that's very interesting to hear you say that. Because I'm thinking back to earlier attempts at merger, of course, which Governor Kohler had initiated, and I recall that the university had responded then with a major public relations campaign, if you like, in order to defeat the measure, and in fact was successful on that occasion.
Well, I don't know really whether, again, I was not in the state at the time of the effort under Governor to bring such a merger off. I, of course, I'm very much aware that this was the case, but, and I don't really know what the differences, if any, in the actual climate of the discussion of the issue in the state from the 1971 instance may have been. I can only say that I do not think it was a political issue of any great moment across Wisconsin in 1971, except insofar as the governor sought to make it one, and insofar as he sought to put all of the influence he could behind getting the legislature to pass the measure. And one reason I think that the legislature was in the final analysis maneuverable into doing this is because as they took their own soundings back in their own districts, I think they sensed that it wasn't something that was going to have a lot of effect among their constituents one way or another, which way they voted on the matter. And therefore, the individual legislators were more maneuverable on this issue than they might otherwise have been. If the legislators had sensed that the people back home in their district were going to be keeping a very sharp eye on what they did on the merger legislation, it might have been much harder to maneuver them into position to voting for it. But I just know they didn't have that pressure back in their districts. The public was yawned about merger.
And you don't feel that there's an effort could have succeeded to in arousing their concern?
Well, let's go back to that subject. In terms of a campaign to drum up interest in trying to forestall merger, let me let me try to sketch very briefly the position that the regents took and maintained almost throughout the whole matter, the whole several months of discussion. There was no question but what the Board of Regents of the University of Wisconsin, very early on in the governor's push to get merger, the Board of Regents on their own initiative and without any particular encouragement from me as the new president, which was unusual because the board and I worked very closely together, and they took no actions except on recommendation from the president, and occasionally they wouldn't accept my recommendation on a given issue, but they never would act without seeking my advice before acting. In this one, there was a kind of immediate, spontaneous, and internal outgrowth of feeling in the board that they were very definitely opposed to merger. They felt that it would had the potential of throwing the great and distinctive university here at Madison into a cauldron of averaging that would only be averaging down, and putting the University of Wisconsin into a homogenizing machine that would fail to properly recognize the distinctive needs and the distinctive strengths and characteristics of this great university here at Madison. And this board, which of course traditionally looked upon their very special concern as being the maintenance and the continued upbuilding of the world-renowned university here at Madison, were greatly concerned over the fact that this university, with all of its distinctive quality, would suddenly find itself sort of on a par level of consideration with state colleges around the state that they felt were of an entirely different order of magnitude and characteristics, and that it just made no sense. The board just, as I say, that original board of regents that had hired me was just almost instinctively and immediately anti-merger, and they voted unanimously to oppose it. That they voted unanimously that their position was opposed to it. Now this is a part of the story that I think has not been well known. In fact, I'm sure it hasn't, and I think it's part of the story that has to be held in confidence for the time being and for some years to come. But Regent Odie Fish, who, as everyone knows, is a very prominent Republican, not only in the leadership of the Republican Party in this state, but nationally, a man who has done everything except be chairman of the Republican National Committee, and he's been offered that several times and has been unwilling to accept it simply because his small business that he operates just doesn't permit him to go off and devote his full time for long periods of time to politics. But Odie was the focal point of real Republican political power in the state of Wisconsin in 1971, as he has been many years since and before. And Odie's political advice to the Board of Regents was, I don't know whether or not the new governor can, with his political influence and political ability to maneuver the assembly of the state legislature to get the votes necessary to vote for merger, but remember that the Republican Party has a majority in the Senate, and the Senate's never going to approve it. And we should simply work with the leadership, the Republican leadership of the Senate, to see that the merger bill never passes the Senate, and there certainly are enough votes there to keep it from happening. Therefore, we're opposed to merger. But let's not go out and make a big political hassle about it across the state and begin to make it a big political issue across the state. Let's just efficiently and effectively see that it's blocked in the Senate or the legislature when it gets there. This was Odie's advice to the board. Odie was looked to for political savvy and understanding by the members of that board, as he was by the Republican leadership of the state. And I was instructed by the Board of Regents not to go out leading a major campaign around the state to block merger. I really, in effect, had my hands tied by the board. I wasn't militantly anxious to get out and fight it. I was a newcomer to the state. I had to accept their judgment that this was good political advice to let the matter be settled in the legislature where they felt the matter could be resolved in the manner that they thought it should. And I therefore did not launch or lead a major campaign in the state, as I might otherwise have attempted to do, simply because the board instructed me that they didn't want me to do that.
You're aware, of course, that there was a lot of public criticism in the press, for instance, over your not coming out with a strong statement early on.
Well, I came out with a strong enough statement. It was perfectly clear to everybody, as every paper in the state has identified me before and since as having been opposed to merger. I think it was well known that I was opposed to it. But I was under clear instructions from my board that they didn't want me to get out making a big political issue out of it, and I guess I felt that perhaps they knew what they were doing, and that why should I, as a newcomer to the state and as a person trying to get a hold of some of the other major problems that the university had at the time, such as trying to get back the faith of the people of the state, trying to get the student rebellion under control on the Madison campus and elsewhere, trying to get a legislative program launched that would give us some pay us some dividends in our in the very severe budget restrictions that were coming at us from Governor Lucey's original recommendations, which were very poor for the university. I had a legislature that was hostile to the university at the time because of the student rebellion. They had had they had been very upset about my predecessor, Ethan Harrington, and I was very much on trial in the legislature to demonstrate that there was a president that they could accept as being more prepared to take a strong hand in curbing the student rebellion and in bringing greater economy to the activities of the university and putting a new emphasis on teaching rather than research and many other things that it was very important for me to be focused on. And I guess I felt that if the board wanted to take on the subject of merger and the politics that went with it, why should I write in my first months as president of the university seek to defy my board and say, you say you don't want me out fighting merger, but I'm going to do it anyway. There wasn't any great point in that. The university had bigger problems than merger facing it at the time anyway. Which is another reason why I think Mr. Lucey felt this was a good time to take a run at something like that, that he could make some political hay on, that, and that the university not only had lost faith with the legislature and with the state, but that the university was preoccupied with a lot of other problems that were to it more significant. Now, it's very interesting that the board of the State Board of Regents of the state universities also very quickly after Mr. Lucey launched his campaign for merger also voted unanimously to take the position that they were opposed to merger. I would have to say that I think the action of that board was based in a somewhat different frame of mind than the University of Wisconsin board, which feared homogenization, feared being pulled down to the state college or state university level of financing and of activity and losing its great distinctiveness and distinctiveness of uniqueness of need. The State Board of Regents for the state universities were worried about another aspect, about the other side of the coin. They saw merger as becoming one vast system in which the University of Wisconsin would run higher education in the state, that the state universities would lose their autonomy and their own strike for freedom and upbuilding on their own grounds, and they didn't want to get shoved into a single administration with the university where university would clearly dominate and repress the aspirations mm-hmm. of the smaller state universities.
Sort of swallow them up.
Sort of swallow them up, exactly. Sort of like putting all the small fish in the same pool with the big fish that would surely eat them all up. And so for somewhat different reasons, but nonetheless adamantly, the state University Board was also unanimously opposed to merger. They did not somehow mount a very significant campaign against merger either. And whether it was because of conversations between members of the two boards that I was not party to, that this was the case, or whether it was they too believed that in the final analysis it really wouldn't happen, I don't know, because I wasn't that close to the people on that board at that time. But there was no doubt that they were opposed to the merger, just as the University of Wisconsin's board was. Yeah, that issue was a little muddied by the fact, was a little perhaps less than clear in the public mind, because at least one of the chancellors, or then presidents of the state universities, namely Lee Dreyfus at Stevens Point, very actively and very vocally took the position of Mr. Lucy that merger would be a great thing. Lee Dreyfus' outlook on the matter was very clear. He saw this as a chance to get all the universities put together, and this would give the state universities the opportunity to seek equalization of all kinds of things with the University of Wisconsin, elevate their resources to the University of Wisconsin level, and thereby bring advantages to the state universities. It wasn't realistic to believe that would happen, I think, but and it didn't really make sense, and it was exactly what the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents and I feared would be a tendency. And in any event, the State Board of Regents of state universities and like the University of Wisconsin Regents clearly identified themselves as being opposed to merger. Then it waffled along.
That's a good word. That's sort of my impression.
Mr. Lucy, you may remember, made some efforts to court the faculty at Madison.
Can you be specific about that?
Well, he came out, for one thing, he came out to the university to speak to a faculty meeting on the Madison campus, invited himself to come, and the faculty congregated themselves to hear him out. He stood for questioning on the subject of merger and defended the concept. It's a rather interesting political problem. Certainly a majority of the Madison faculty, certainly in the heart of the university in letters and science, but I think very much more widely too, would tend to be Democratic by majority. And many of the faculty members had indeed been very active in the very specific campaign to get Mr. Lucy elected. And yet here they were confronted almost immediately with his demand for merger, which basically they didn't like, and which they hadn't seen coming in the campaign. B, they saw his very repressive budget recommendations for the university in his very first month in office, which obviously was disenchanting. And beyond that, Mr. Lucy in those days, as the record will show, was very active in criticizing the Madison faculty for being more interested in research than in teaching, and that and telling them they ought to increase their teaching loads and do less research and get back to what it was they were supposed to be doing in the first place. Well, this kind of quickly strained relations between a faculty that tended to be democratic and tended to be to have been identified with Mr. Lucy's campaign, and then to discover that the hand they had sought to help was already slapping them around. But there were mixed motives and there were mixed feelings of many in many kinds of cross currents in the day. And I think, if my memory serves me correctly, that the Madison faculty never took itself a really well-coordinated and clear-cut anti-merger position. There were politics that made it difficult to reach the conclusions that might otherwise have been reached about merger. And it was part of the reason it all waffled along was that there were conflicting points of view that came out of different corners on the subject, and the Madison faculty never became militantly interested in fighting merger, although generally speaking those were the noises you heard out of Madison. It never was a welling up of major, let's go to the battle line on this one. And
do you think if you had been in a position to take a stronger stand that they might have?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I think I might very easily have been carrying a battle flag out on the battlefield and suddenly have looked around and said, well, where in the world are the troops? I never was sure in my mind about that. I can testify at least that no faculty leadership from Madison ever came to my office to urge me to launch such a battle or to indicate their ready willingness to join me in such a battle. As I say, there were a lot of political cross purposes in the day that never were clearly defined or clearly out on the table. And in any event, the board's word was restraint. Don't launch a major battle on this subject. Then the interesting fact began to develop as came down to the final vote in the Senate as to just what was the going to happen.
Had the anything been done that you're aware of to assure that enough votes in the Senate to defeat this?
Presumably, yes. Generally speaking, I did not participate. The Regents had taken this on as their own affair, and they wanted me to stand aside from it. They'd take care of that.
Are you aware of anything that was going on?
Oh, I'm sure that, yes, I'm sure that there were conversations, very particularly engineered by, or masterminded by Odie Fish, that were going on with members of the Senate. At that point in the middle summer, as we were approaching the merger decision, I was very much preoccupied with the budget battle. I was working with the legislators all the time. But I was, as Mr. Lucy well knew, because of the very poor recommendations he gave the university, was fighting an uphill battle trying to save the university's budget from real disaster.
Yes, of course, this was going on simultaneously.
And this was going on simultaneously with the merger business. And you know the interesting thing, just as I said a while back, just as this was a great political non-issue with the people in the state, it was not a red-hot issue in the legislature either. They had other preoccupations that were much more interesting to them than that. There were some legislators that were very interested in it, but that wasn't a big, it wasn't a big thing in the legislature. It was just something Mr. Lucy kept pushing from behind the scenes, with all the political influence of a politically astute governor in his first year, on his honeymoon year of his first term in office. One of the interesting things was that when it finally came down to the crunch in the Senate, a counting of noses at the time would have certainly led, I think, to the general belief that the Republican majority was going to defeat the measure, even though it would have been a comparatively close vote. I've forgotten exactly what the numbers were at the time, but it was something like 24 Republicans to, what, 16 Democrats, something of that
something
order.
Something like that.
But then, very interestingly, right near the end, certain crucial Republican votes in the Senate began to waver and then fall the other way.
Can you explain about that?
At the time, it was not entirely clear to me, although it seemed pretty clear that these were people that were being very heavily pressured by the governor's office, because he worked very, very hard to get that done. And after it was all over, it became apparent what had happened in some of those crucial votes. It turned out that the state was building a major warehouse in one senatorial district that hadn't been there before. It turned out that one of the Republican senators received a gubernatorial appointment as a judge in his district. There were political payoffs to people. You vote for merger and I'll see that you get such and such, which is a political advantage to you in your district, or which is a political advantage to you personally. And there was enough of that going on, and how was anyone in the university to counter such things? We didn't have goodies to pass out. When it came right down to the final analysis, at the final end, the one vote that was necessary to make it a one-vote margin in favor of merger in the Senate finally came through. I don't know yet why the governor really felt that it was such a It was worth all the points he paid to get that done in his first year in office, because I don't think it's ever been, and even it, I don't think it now is, a major political asset to him. But he played a lot of cards to get it done, and he got it done by a very slender margin indeed. And I think the Board of Regents, almost up to the end, didn't think he would get it done. But I don't think they, I think the board...
Whoops.